And now, an Envision Financial podcast with Luke Smith on Canberra's 2CC.
24 to 5 on a Friday afternoon, which means it's time to welcome to the studio once again from Envision Financial. Luke Smith, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's a Friday. How did that happen?
I don't know, but it feels like we're here every other day at the moment. Yeah, it is absolutely ripping by, which I'm not sure is good or bad.
It's a busy time.
But it's, yes, long, you know, bring on 28 June.
It can't come soon. Well, we've only got 1 week of the financial year left now.
Yes.
So if you haven't got your affairs in order by now, you've probably left things a little bit late.
Yeah, look, I think so. And I think people, and you know, we've been banging on about this with plenty of notice because some funds have already shut contribution windows. So you might be surprised to go, oh, I've got till the 28th to the end of the financial year, and then you ring up your super fund and go, I'd like to, and they said, oh, sorry, that shut on the 22nd. That shut on the this, they shut on the that. So, you know, I'd advise people, if you're still racing to get a contribution in, which plenty of people have been thinking about doing for 11 months, call your fund and see if it's possible, as opposed to making the payment without asking and finding out that it lands in next year's financial year because they haven't been able to process it in time. So if you're going to make a payment, call and check first because it might avoid some frustration and you could hold that money and use it for something else or, you know, allocate it to another strategy. But check before you start pumping money into super thinking you'll make it when funds could be shut.
No, at this late stage, your only option is probably to spend the weekend at Officeworks and buy as much stuff as you can.
Oh, look, yeah, ramp up those deductions. Oh, yeah, instant asset write-off, find $20,000 to, you know, throw at something, and then you can ask for forgiveness and not permission from the ATO later.
Today's topic relates to the new financial year, which is just over a week away now. How can people control their risk levels within their superannuation in the new financial year? Well, how can they?
Yeah, look, I think this one is becoming more and more prevalent because the market is continuing to run and run and run and go up and up and up and up, and people are becoming more aware of that. But I think we need to keep in mind that, especially when we're talking about superannuation, it is very much, for the vast majority of people, a long-term proposition. So whilst we need to be mindful of prices and allocations and the implementation of new money, I would always challenge the thinking that I'm older, I need to be more defensive, because I'm yet to find a retired person that doesn't walk into my office and go, I want really strong income to pay a pension and I want growth to offset inflation. Now, whether you're 26 or 86, that's going to require an element of risk to be taken.
Yeah.
And today we're going to touch on some things that people can consider or keep in mind when it comes to their super or in any other structure that they're investing in to try and mitigate risk, because you can have too much of a good thing. And there's always that double-edged sword of, should I buy some of that? Is it going to go up? Is it going to come down? So I think to sort of start there, diversification is obviously the primary objective of most investment philosophies. We don't want all our eggs in one basket, as mums and dads used to say for many, many years. And that remains true to this day. And I think it's harder and harder for your average person to understand the level of diversification that they maintain because of the language used now or the label of the investment option. And in the past, we've talked about what does balance mean. And I think this is now where it becomes really prevalent, because when markets are running up, I find people have the risk tolerance of a rhinoceros. When they're coming down, not so much.
No.
So the first thing I would be doing is looking and saying, what is my allocation to growth assets? And a growth asset would include the following sectors: property, infrastructure, Australian shares, and international. And if you can add those up and go into your super fund's website and have a look at the pie chart that they would produce for you for your chosen generic option, like a balanced, a growth, a conservative balanced, a high-low growth, whatever half of these things mean, you want to be looking to try and say, okay, if I have a medium-term sort of time frame and a medium risk aversion, 70% growth assets will get it done. Now, for most industry funds, that's balanced. I'd say that's the most inappropriate label they could put on it, because it's not balanced. But when things are good, you'll tolerate it. When they're not, be mindful of it. So look at your asset allocation and where things are invested. Know what you're holding and understand what that label means. Because when I explain to a lot of people the term balanced, they think like a seesaw, half and half, it's flat. If it's 70-30, that's not flat.
No, it's not.
And vice versa. So again, understand what the label means so that you can avoid disappointment during weakness. I'd also then consider the time frame that you are looking to invest in. Now, why is that important? A lot of people will come in and say, well, I'm getting older, I may need to be more conservative. And we've touched on the inappropriateness of that in a lot of situations, because people want good income, they want growth, they want to see the value go up, and they want to offset inflation. And if you're too defensive, that is just as dangerous. And I use the analogy all the time. If you were driving down the parkway and the speed limit's 100 and you did 40, I say to most people, what would happen? And they go, I'd annoy a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have people hurling abuse at me, and I'd be late getting where I'm going. Now, if we think about that concept, that's being too defensive, because cash doesn't grow, it doesn't offset inflation, and it's not going to generate a total return that you could achieve by being a little bit more aggressive. So being too defensive, I would argue, is just as dangerous as being too aggressive. Because if you went down Gungahlin Drive or the parkway and did 170 in a 100 zone,
you'd be in very big trouble.
You'd be in very big trouble. And if you hit a tree, you'd be very lucky to get out of the car. Now, people don't need to drive their investments that fast. I know you need to drive that fast to fit in on Gungahlin Drive at 8:30 in the morning, because that's the standard speed limit.
No, it's not.
But from an investment perspective, you don't need to be there. But if the speed limit's 100 and you did 90 to 110, that is generally the range that most people will drive at.
Except on the road, you're not supposed to go past the speed limit. So
true.
There you go.
But again, Gungahlin Drive.
Great. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to cover all our bases here. I don't want to be giving bad legal advice. You can stick to the financial advice, but the legal advice is do not exceed the speed limit. Yeah. Because if you do, you
correct.
Run the risk of being penalised, or worse than that, hurting yourself or others in an accident.
And I guess this is the point of talking about diversification. Because if you're too aggressive and you don't understand that, and the market turns on you, you're going to get penalised as well.
Yes.
And for exactly that same reason. That's why we bring to the attention of people, understand the risk you're taking on. Because if you think you are balanced and you're not, you could be lining yourself up for a speeding ticket, and that's represented in your super fund as a reduction in its value.
Yeah.
So understand what your label means. Try and focus on generating a good income stream. I find people find a lot of comfort in having a 3, 4, 5% income stream generated from their dividends out of their superannuation to fund a pension they may be taking. Because if you're 55 to 65, you've got to take 4% of the pension balance as a minimum. So if you could generate that out of your portfolio, and that covers the vast majority of your living costs, you're protecting the capital and ensuring the longevity of your investments, because you've got a reduced need to sell down the things that are there to live the way you want to live. So look to try and generate a really strong income stream. Take advantage of franking credits. They're there to be used. As the broader populace, we told Bill Shorten a number of years ago, hey, we're keeping our franking credits, thank you very much.
Yes.
And if you're not using them, you're actually taxing yourself, because they are that powerful in a tax-free pension. They are cash that comes back from the government. So if you're in a super fund that doesn't let you control franking credits, I think you're doing yourself a disservice.
And the whole concept of franking credits is quite simple. It's a tax credit that is awarded based on the tax that has been paid by the company already.
Yep.
So if you're not taking advantage of the franking credit, you're effectively paying tax twice.
Well, you're missing out on, you know, some significant upside, because an account-based pension in retirement is tax-free. And if there's no tax to pay and you've accumulated $5,000 or $10,000 of franking credits in your pension, the ATO will give you that back as a check.
Yeah.
Now, if you're in an industry fund and you can't control that, I'd say you're robbing yourself of free money by controlling your asset allocation, and therefore the outcome of that asset allocation is dividends and franking credits. So people need to be really mindful of that, because I think a lot of people would say, hey, who's Frank and why am I getting a credit from him?
Yep.
Wouldn't be the first time someone said that. So, you know, look at what your fund gives you and the controls that you have. And this is where we've spoken in previous shows. It's not that this fund's better than that fund. If you want to control those things and you're in a fund that doesn't let you, then I'd argue it's not appropriate. For the same reason I say nearly 50 times a day, a mini will not pull a horse float.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean we don't like minis. It's just not fit for purpose. So control the income, control the franking credits. Look at the costs of the fund you're in. Because from a risk perspective, when you're looking at total return, if your costs are higher than they need to be, people can be quite frustrated by not understanding what they are paying, because there are costs that are in addition to just an admin fee for being in that fund. The big one that slips through to the keeper a lot of times is the ICR, or the internal cost ratio. And that's the charge that the la-di-da Australian Equity Fund charges you to use that particular investment. Now, that could be anything from 0.5 to 2%, but it's generally reported very badly, and you'd have to go looking for it. Much to most people's frustration, what I would say there is look and see if there's an ETF or an exchange-traded fund available on your approved product list of your fund provider that invests in a similar segment that could give you a similar return at a fraction of the cost. As an example, to illustrate the value of that, an Australian equity fund, an active manager, take a Fidelity, for example, they charge 0.85, 0.9 of a percent to be in their fund. Now, over the last 12 months, they have underperformed the ASX 200 index that could be replicated in an exchange-traded fund that costs 0.15 of a percent. Still get a dividend, still get the franking credits, still get the same market exposure to the vast majority of the comparison. So if you're holding that and going, well, what is it costing me across 20 investments? You might be able to find that you're paying maybe 0.5% more than you need to when there are alternative investment options available with a similar exposure at a significantly reduced cost.
Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me in the studio today, and we're asking the question, how can you control the level of risk within your superannuation in the new financial year? It's about 11 minutes to 5. Back with more in just a moment. Well, it's about 8 minutes to 5 now. It's a Friday afternoon. Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me in the studio today, and we're talking about controlling your risk levels within your superannuation. As the new year is about to dawn, yes, we've got a lot of things to think about. So, Luke, what are the key considerations for people to keep in mind?
Well, I think the last one that we were sort of touching on in a block before the ad break was the last one we didn't get to was tax. You know, think about now, this isn't really a risk mitigation, but again, I think it's a risk in the sense that you're paying more than you need to. Think about in the new year if it's appropriate for you to start a pension from July, so that all of your earnings inside the account are tax-free. Because superannuation funds are taxed at 15%, but as we said before the ad break, if you've got a load of surplus franking credits that come back as cash, you might be able to use those to offset a deductible contribution next year, because the limit's moving to 30,000. So you might have a little bit more room to put more money into super to lower your taxable income. And some surplus franking credits in a pension account could be a great way of negating some of that contributions tax that will be paid. And you have different controls in relation to how that's managed depending on the fund that you're in. But think about the tax structure of your fund, because it can improve the total return because you're negating some of the outgoing expenses in relation to how the fund is operated.
Marvellous. So are we now? What do we need to remember?
Yeah, so I think understand how fast you're driving the car from a risk perspective. Don't assume that balance means 50-50, because nobody really knows what balance means anymore. Understand the asset allocation, and also remember that you can have too much of a good thing. If you can add into superannuation regularly and diversify your fund, I think you're mitigating a lot of the risk by doing that, and that could be through superannuation guarantee payments from work or your own salary sacrifice or personal contribution. Look at diversifying using shares, ETFs and managed funds. Think about the individual weightings of specific assets. Everybody loves CBA, But if you hold 30% of your portfolio in CBA and something happens, it could have an adverse impact on the total value of your account. So remember that even though we might love something, we can love it too much and have too much of it. So be proactive there and manage your individual stock weightings. Understand your exposures to specific areas. Having six green apples is not diversification. You need an apple and a banana and a kiwi fruit and a mango, and you don't just have six of the same things and think more is better. Have different areas, have different focuses, have different underlying investments. I think people need to remember that time is important. Time can mitigate a lot of the risk that you maintain in super because it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I think you need to keep in mind that if you retire at 60, your super could last you another 30, 35 years. So you do have a time frame to maintain a suitable level of risk to get the income and growth that you want to be able to retire. And I would challenge that thinking that, well, I'm older, I need to be more conservative, because I'm yet to meet anybody that's worked for 45 years that goes, I'm going to have a red hot crack now and I just don't want the money that I need to do it. And I think that can come by being too conservative, which in itself is risky, as we discussed. So I think if people keep that in mind, maximise the income from the assets in the fund and generate a really good income stream, take advantage of the use of franking credits and use them to increase the and bolster the return from an income and a total return perspective. And if you're not utilising franking credits in your fund, go to a fund that will let you do that. And if that means you have to leave an industry fund or go to another fund of a different structure, that's fine. Again, we're not saying good or bad, because again, a mini will not pull a horse flat. We're not saying minis are bad, but you have to have a fund that is fit for purpose. And when people identify these things and go, well, that could be worth $5,000 or $6,000 a year to me, what are you losing by not having it? You know, the Australian public voted with their feet and said, no, we're not going to give them up. And if you're not using them, well, it's like having a Ferrari in the garage and losing the keys. It's not much point having it, is it? So, you know, I think if people keep those things in mind and keep it in context, everything will be fine in retirement.
Indeed, fingers crossed. Where can listeners get more information?
Yeah, 6260-4749. We've got envisionfinancial.com.au. That's Envision with an E. We've got the podcast, The Strategy Stack, at Luke Talks Money on iTunes and Spotify. We've got Envision Financial Canberra on YouTube, where we've got all of the shows and the shorts. We've also got The Strategy Stack, a handle on the Tiki Tocker. And all of this asset allocation and risk consideration is in Smart Money Strategy, your ultimate guide to financial planning, in all good bookstores and online.
And it would make a marvellous Happy New Year gift at the beginning of the brand new financial new year.
Totally agree.
Luke, thanks very much.
See you next week.
Luke Smith from Envision Financial back with us again next Friday afternoon at the same time right here on 2CC to talk money matters once again.